Now, on Bulldog Live, it's Second Amendment Tuesday. Joining Bulldog is attorney Penny Dean.
Brought to you by Riley's Sports Shop and Hooks It, making Second Amendment Tuesdays possible. They're found online at rileysguns.com, as well as 1575 Hooks It Road. Bulldog Live on the Pulse.
Now, I know the Constitution, and it gives me certain rights that I will never, ever give up. At least not without a fight. So if anybody's even thinking they're gonna take my guns away, like the good old boys down in Gonzales, I got one thing to say. Come on, make my day.
Come and take it if you want it. Come and take it if you think you can. Come and take it, but I warn you, you'll have to pry it from my cold dead hands. We want the freedom that God gave us, so you best not cross that line. If you want this gun, you gotta come through us and take it.
One shot at a time.
Second Amendment Tuesdays brought to you by Riley Sports Shop and Hooks It. You can also reach them at 485-5000. And, you know, as we return back to our work week here on Bulldog Live after being off yesterday, I hope you enjoyed the repeat program. But, you know, we've got some good news and bad news. And before we get, you know, throughout the day here, of course, and before we get to what is the bad news right here on Second Amendment Tuesdays, I do want to bring for you an inspiring Second Amendment song by Lisa May. It's called Our Guns, and this has been floating around through the emails and the like, so here, give this one a listen, and you know, then we can use the energy from this to right what's wrong.
We are concerned Americans, proud members of the NRA, protecting our rights to keep and bear arms, supporters of the GOA. Sisters of the Second Amendment say self-defense is a basic right. Hunters and first responders, we keep firearms at our side. Why are law-abiding citizens forced to keep our guns locked away? All it does is make it harder to keep our homes and loved ones safe. So tell us, why are guns to blame again for the violence in our lives? It's the criminals with their twisted minds. Another gun law won't keep them in line. Like Cornyn love their rifles, for them it's live free or die. While they protect us on the front lines, we'll trust in God to keep our powder dry. Should the tide shift against we the people, you can bet this battle hymn will be sung. Woe be unto those who try to confiscate our guns, as written in the Second Amendment for the security of a free state. A well-regulated militia is needed to keep our country safe. This right can't be infringed upon. Our founders had foreseen, when the people fear government, you know it's called tyranny. Progressives, they want to change our country under the guise of making it fair. We know it's all about control. It's just an act when they say they care. Now the warning shots have been fired. The battle has just begun. Through all those secret backdoor deals, they are aiming for our guns. Like poor men love their rifles, for them it's live free or die. We're united to defend our freedom. We'll trust in God to keep our powder dry. Should the tide shift against we the people, you can bet this battle hymn will be sung. Woe be unto those who try to confiscate our guns. Just as the faithful corpsman swears a solemn creed in defense of this great nation, stand his rifle at heed. We are all obliged to defend her. Our Constitution decrees we will stand as one, united against foreign and domestic enemies. Like corpsmen love their rifles, for them it's live free or die. We're united to defend our credo. We'll trust in God to keep our powder dry. Should the tide shift against we the people, you can bet this battle hymn will be sung. Woe be unto those who try to confiscate our guns. There'll be no mercy for the fool who tries to confiscate my guns.
All right, well, Penny Dean joins us now for Second Amendment Tuesdays right here on Bulldog Live on the Pulse. Hi, Penny.
Hi, how are you?
Well,
you're going to be mad when I give you the Second Amendment reports for this week.
I've read a couple of headlines, not sure if I want to read them, although one of them comes from my old state of Maryland, which I really don't know what happened there. I just saw it referenced in another story where in Georgia, the organization GeorgiaCarry.org is fighting to end the prohibition on guns in churches there, one of only three states to do that.
Wow. Now, here's what's interesting is that what I call the good preachers, when I was back home, my mother's preacher, former preacher at the church where she was at, believed in carrying a firearm. And his belief was that he is the protector of the flock. He's the spiritual protector of the flock, you know, designed to take care of people and to guide them on the right path. But as a practical thing in this world, he believed he should be the physical protector of his flock.
Mm-hmm.
And so to that end, believed that a firearm was a good thing to carry.
Yeah, there you go. Well, how many stories have we seen the world over, really, where people go into churches and just start shooting wildly in the stuff? But not only in this country, but, you know, how many times can we talk about South Africa, for an example? And I did an interview with a guy a few years ago, Carl Van Wyk, who made a movie, a video, and I've seen it around from time to time, The Right and Duty of Self-Defense.
Oh, my God, and duty. I think that's an important thing.
He had a handgun, and he warded off three attackers, three terrorists, and he killed one of them in the process.
Oh, my God.
With his handgun.
Good for him.
Against them coming in, trying to shoot up and trying to kill everybody in there, because if it wasn't for him, everybody would have died, I'm sure, so...
Yeah, and that's something to think about, you know.
Yep, exactly. So anyway, what you got for us today?
Well, we have two things. We have two specific cases, and those cases come out of both Maryland and D.C.
Oh, and great. They're one in a kind.
Yeah. Yeah, they're exactly both the same. The first one is Charles F. Williams, Jr., v. State of Maryland. And basically, Mr. Williams was carrying a firearm that he had purchased. He was carrying it in a backpack. And, of course, you know how the inevitable thing happens. He somehow or other, a police officer becomes involved, even though he wasn't doing anything at the time. And the gist of it is that his defense was that Heller and Chicago basically gave him a right to self-defense and a right to carry a firearm outside the home if necessary, especially when... in Maryland, he said that it would have been futile for him to apply for a license to carry and then get denied, because he basically, in Maryland, they're called permits.
Right.
He said in Maryland, had he applied for a permit to carry, he would inevitably have been denied. And so he said, you know, this is a futile bit of activity.
Correct. He's absolutely correct in that.
That's exactly right. And the trial judge, which was Judge Wallace, found Williams guilty of wearing, carrying, or transporting a handgun in violation of Section 4, 203, 8, 1, I and sentenced him to 3 years incarceration with 2 years suspended. So it's essentially 1 year in jail.
Uh-huh.
Court of Special Appeals affirmed, determining that the Second Amendment is not applicable to the states. Now, of course, since then, the Chicago case has come down reversing that part of it, because they have determined that through the 14th Amendment that the Second Amendment is incorporated to the states.
Yes, which is a good thing, because Maryland does not mention anything about firearms in its constitution. Yeah.
Maybe, you know, I've been through Maryland. I don't think the Second Amendment does apply there.
I lived there. No, it doesn't.
Or it doesn't seem to. They don't seem to much care about it.
No. It's very hostile. It's a very hostile environment to the Second Amendment.
Yeah. And here's what the court further said, that if were the Second Amendment to apply to Maryland, here's the key word, were the Second Amendment to apply to Maryland, it would not invalidate the statute at issue here, because Section 4-203B6 expressly permits wearing, carrying, or transporting a handgun in one's residence, thereby preserving the right, in quotes, to keep and bear arms in the home for purposes of immediate self-defense. And they cite Williams, and so the procedural history is quite interesting here, is that Williams asserted that the prohibition in Section 4-203 against wearing, carrying, or transporting a handgun without a permit and outside one's home infringes upon his Second Amendment right to, quote, keep and bear arms. He contended that Heller and McDonald, the greatest decisions that we've had in decades in this country, made clear that the Second Amendment establishes a right of persons to keep and bear arms for lawful purposes. Mm-hmm. And the state said, oh, Heller and McDonald do stand for that proposition. But in this case, states remain free to enact, here's a key word here, reasonable.
Oh, yes. I remember that.
Yeah, on the possession and use of arms. And so the question is, define reasonable here. And the state said that the statutory scheme that was embodied in Section 4.203 is eminently reasonable, because it permits the wearing, carrying, or transporting a handgun in the home. I guess you can transport the handgun from your living room to your kitchen.
Yes, right. Uh-huh.
And so that's, you know, specifically. And so here is the really sad thing.
Oh, and by the way, let me just interrupt and add one more thing.
Sure.
Somewhat irrelevant to the conversation. The Castle Doctrine that they're talking about there does not apply to businesses in Maryland.
Oh, I love it.
Yeah.
So,
I know. I've had to talk about a few cases of business owners who defended themselves. Yeah. But go on. Continue.
So that's even worse, because I don't know the statistical breakdown in Maryland, but there has to be at least a high number of crimes that occur in businesses in Maryland if it's like any other state.
That's why I'm not there anymore.
Well, imagine if you couldn't protect yourself in your jewelry store.
You can't.
Yeah. What's the point?
Exactly.
The criminal, there probably is a welcome... I've never noticed it, but at the Maryland borders, there are welcome rapists, robbers, and thieves sign. There must be this big billboard at the border. Welcome, rapists, robbers, and thieves. Maryland welcomes you. You know, there will be no impediment to your activity and businesses here. Come one, come all. Holy tamale.
Oh, my gosh. Yes, but continue.
Yeah. So the bottom line is, in the case in Maryland, and that decision was rendered January 5th, 2011, and there was oral argument. This particular decision I'm referring to was January 5th.
That case that you were talking about was rendered in the state court, the Court of Special Appeals.
That's exactly right.
Yep.
That was a Maryland court. And so people say, well, why does that matter to us? And my answer is, hang on, little butterfly, we're getting to that.
Okay.
Okay, so what happens is that case was appealed to the U.S. Supreme Court. Dr. Stephen Halbrook, who's a well-noted constitutional Second Amendment attorney, noted author, scholar, he applied for what are called a writ of certiorari and asked the U.S. Supreme Court to consider and basically to decide this case.
Mm-hmm.
And unfortunately, on October 3rd, 2011, which is last week, the U.S. Supreme Court denied cert. And that's very, very important to know that it denied cert, because what that does procedurally is it does two things that are very, very important. Number one, it means the trial court and appeals court, in other words, the lower decisions, stand. And it really sends a very sad message out that, you know what, actually we don't care as much about the Second Amendment as we fooled you that we did. Because the bottom right. line is they could have taken that case, they had the discretion to do so and decide it, and they chose not to do so.
And at the very least, tell the state of Maryland, hey, we are incorporating the Second Amendment of the United States into your state laws and your state constitution, as the Chicago case did.
And more importantly, what
to reaffirm
I would like,
that principle, at least. You think the court would want to reaffirm their own principles.
Well, not only that. Not only would I like them to do that, here, I would like them to actually go just a baby step further. That to say that you cannot give lip service to the Second Amendment, if as a practical matter, John Q. Public, unless he's Donald Trump or somebody really rich and famous, if John Q. Public, who's the waitress or the car washer or whatever, doesn't have a snowball's chance in the South of going in to get a quote-unquote permit, as they call them in Maryland, to protect mm-hmm. himself outside of the home, what the heck is the Second Amendment worth? It's like a little nice old plaque that hangs on our wall. If
right.
it doesn't help us every day.
By the way, ironically, the people that I know in Maryland that can get those permits to carry firearms,
yep.
they are bankers and lawyers who carry around lots of money.
And you want me to tell you what I've always said? Is my life worth more as a lawyer now than it was as a poor waitress schlepping whatever?
Well, how about this one? I knew a divorce lawyer who challenged this same type of thing, and he went up through the Maryland Court of Appeals, which is their Supreme Court, and he ended up into federal court, and he ran into these same roadblocks as this case you're talking about.
And
he's a divorce lawyer, and his life was threatened, and he was denied by the Maryland State Police from having a quote-unquote permit.
Do you want me to tell you what? In statistically speaking, divorce attorneys are at the greatest risk.
Uh-huh.
And I can tell you, when I did one case years ago, I would tell everyone, I am absolutely terrified because I was terrified of her ex-husband who had made all sorts of threats against me. And this man had been in and out of prison and jail a million times. Had
so
left
he
her.
Doesn't care?
Yeah. No, they don't care. And so these weren't just like idle threats. This is a man who had 20 years of history of violence, you know?
Yeah.
And so... So I'll tell you what, it's a Charles F. Williams Jr. v. State of Maryland case. The fact that the U.S. Supreme Court denied cert is very sad because sometimes it's how...
It gives the gun grabbers more ammunition, shall I say, to try and come after our rights, because they'll keep saying, this has been their line for some time, well, you have a right to have a gun in your home. You just can't have it out in the street. That's what the Brady folks have been saying.
Oh, that's exactly right. And the thing I think that's saddest about this... It's really sad to me.
That's why they were arguing that Georgia should not allow guns in churches, because they say, well, I don't want those around my children. You have the right to do it in your home, but you can't do it near me.
Yeah.
That's what they were saying.
Yeah.
So,
no, that, and you know, there's always a saying that bad cases make bad law and all those type of things. And I'll tell the pro-firing people what's notable in this case is sometimes you see petitions for cert that are not properly drafted or they could have been done better. But in this particular case, Dr. Halbrook is the one who filed the – or Dr./Attorney Halbrook filed the petition for cert, very well-respected, very experienced attorney. So I'm certain that there's not any defect in his petition. In other words, he turned every stone he could.
Right.
But the bottom line was the Supreme Court and I'll tell you what's really, I guess you'd say, further – troublesome in some ways to me is that Murphy wrote a concurring opinion in Williams v. State of Maryland in the decision that was rendered at the...
Who's Murphy?
Right. In other words...
Who's Murphy?
Murphy is one of the judges that heard the case in the Court of Appeals of Maryland.
Oh, okay. Yes.
He wrote a concurring opinion. It's one paragraph, and it says, and I quote, "While I agree with the majority that the petitioner's conviction should be affirmed, I would not hold that the petitioner's conduct is, quote, outside the scope of the Second Amendment. I would affirm on the ground that although the Second Amendment is applicable to an on-the-street possession of a handgun, that amendment," and here's the key words, "is satisfied," and this is in italics in the original, "by a statute that places reasonable restrictions on the constitutional right to bear arms."
Hmm.
And so I think that opinion is troubling because clearly Judge Murphy, who was one of the panel judges that heard this particular case, he believes that Maryland's handgun restrictions are reasonable.
Yeah, how nice.
Right. What I'm trying to say is hello.
Yeah.
If you think Maryland's handgun restrictions are reasonable, that's probably because, think about it, if you're an appellate court judge, is that panel going to deny you a license to carry? Yeah.
Right, exactly. Anyway, Penny, before we go into the D.C. case, we'll only have a couple of minutes to talk about that. Just a reminder that this portion of Second Amendment Tuesdays with Attorney Penny Dean is brought to you by Riley Sports Shop in Hooksett. They're located at 1575 Hooksett Road. You can reach them at 485-5000 and rileysguns.com. They are a strong defender. Not only are they the largest gun store in the state, but they're the strongest defenders of your freedom and your right to keep and bear arms. And boy, do they have a huge selection to choose from there as well. So thanks to Riley's Sports Shop for helping to make this segment possible. So, Penny, as we talk about what happened in the D.C. case, what's that one about?
Well, this is what I call Black October Week, okay? So the Williams decision was October 3rd, okay? And the Heller, now, for everyone who's saying to me, wait a minute, what is she talking about Heller? Dick Anthony Heller, who brought us the Heller decision from the United States Supreme Court a couple years back, has also sued again the District of Columbia. Okay, and he filed this suit on November 15, 2010. And to tell you how long it takes for us to percolate, it was argued on November 15, 2010. Mm. It was decided October 4th, 2011.
Wow.
So here's what I tell people when they say, well, why don't you do this and this and this? I said, first of all, you got to have buckets of money. Second of all, you have to have a lot of patience because this is not an atypical situation where from the time you argue the case, and it was brought months and months and months prior to that, okay?
Yeah.
From the time you get the decision, it's approximately a year later. And this decision came down October 4th, 2011. And remember, the Williams v. State of Maryland came down October 3rd, 2011. So that's why I say we've got Black October here.
Yeah.
And this is a case, this was appealed from the United States District Court for the District of Columbia. And Dick Heller brought a case, and again, he had very able counsel. Dr. Halbrook argued the case with Richard Gardner. And, of course, then we had D.C. And basically what Dick Heller argued is that these restrictions on semi-autos, okay, cannot survive constitutional scrutiny, okay? And basically said that the D.C. Firearms Control Regulation Act of 75, they challenged it both facially and as applied and said, look it, you cannot continue to restrict the types of firearms that we own.
Hmm.
Okay, they said basically that you cannot pick, if you will, you can't pick what I can do. You can't.
Gotcha.
You can't do that. And basically it said that D.C. Code 7-2502-02A6, magazines holding more than 10 rounds of ammunition, and the FRA, which is their internal reg in D.C., defines assault weapon to include certain brands and models of semi-automatic rifles, pistols, and shotguns.
Great.
Colt AR-15, my favorite little thing. You know, what they call the black rifles, right?
Uh-huh.
As well as semi-automatic firearms with certain features. Regardless of make and model, with a semi-automatic rifle with a pistol grip that protrudes conspicuously. What does conspicuously mean?
To be seen. Yeah.
Yeah, beneath the action of the weapon. How many of you have shot things with thumbhole stocks? I love them, right? No thumbhole stocks in D.C. They also prohibit the possession of any quote-unquote large capacity ammunition feeding device, which includes a magazine or similar device that has a capacity of more than 10 rounds of ammunition.
Glad my best friend lives in Virginia.
You know, so the bottom line is that this case, which Dick Heller brought, bless his soul, the man, you know, is spending his life fighting for our rights. The court said, look, there's not a problem with this. What's your problem? And basically, the court in its opinion, which again is one of those things where sometimes their opinion is worth noting, says this is a case where emotions run high on both sides of the policy issue because of the vital public safety interests at stake. Now, I don't know that there really is any public safety interest at stake if I have a 10 or 11 round magazine.
Right.
You know, as one who was born here, grew up in the community in the late 60s, 70s, and 80s, and has lived and worked in this area almost all of his life, I am acutely aware of the gun, drug, and gang violence that's plagued all of us. Whenever someone starts in talking about gang and drug violence in the same sentence as guns, do we ever question where they're coming from?
Right, exactly. I know, exactly. Oh, my gosh. So that was the appellate court decision, the D.C. Circuit Court, or who was it that did this decision?
This decision was handed down by United States Court of Appeals for the District of Columbia Circuit. It was handed down October 4th, 2011.
So the next step, if there is an appeal, would be to the United States Supreme Court, if they decide to hear it.
Here is the whole problem.
Because I have to wrap this up in less than a minute. So
yes, yeah. I'll go through the procedural history next time,
okay.
And I think that's important. And then the other thing that I want to ask people to start calling or emailing me about, and it's slightly off topic, is in New Hampshire we're allowed to check our firearms when we go into courts in New Hampshire.
Yeah. Okay.
And I have personally had a horrible experience most recently. I was threatened with arrest. For doing something legal. And so if anybody else has had checked their guns in courts in New Hampshire, I would love it if they emailed me or called me and told me about their experience.
Good. All right. And they can do that at?
230-9999.
And how about an email?
Penny@pennydean.com.
All right. Well, Penny Dean, thank you very much. Talk to you next week.
With better news, we hope.
I hope so. Good.
Thank you.
Take care. Bye-bye. Yep. And this Second Amendment Tuesday is brought to you by Riley Sports Shop in Hooksett, 1575 Hooksett Road, 485-5000, rileysguns.com. Bulldog Live continues on The Pulse.